Hi, this is Mark, and welcome to the Candle Shore Podcast. This is show number 28. In this episode, I interview Mr. Edward Sanchez, founder and CEO of Code Factory, the makers of MobileSpeak for pocket PC and smartphones for the blind and low vision. Via the magic of Skype, I was able to interview Mr. Sanchez from his office in Barcelona. Enjoy.
Welcome back to the show. With me today is Mr. Edward Sanchez, that is president and CEO of Code Factory, the maker of one of the best screen readers on the market, if not the best, is the MobileSpeak screen reader. And I'll let Edward, if you could, by the way, welcome on board.
Thank you.
Yeah. There'll be a lot of people listening to the show who, aren't familiar with MobileSpeak and Code Factory. So if you give us just a short introduction and tell us how you came to, be the president or start the company, it'd be great.
Okay, the company basically started in the year 1999 when I was actually working in the United States at another company, and then I had always been very interested in all the accessibility field. So when I came back to Spain after working in the States, we basically, together with Jordi, who's my brother, we started Code Factory.
Oh, it's a family business. I like it. It's family business.
Yes, it started really small with just me, Jordi, and one other employee. But over the years, it has grown a bit. In the early days, we were mainly doing computer games for the blind.
Oh, okay.
And basically, in the year 2003 or 2004, we basically started doing all this, software for mobile phones, and that's where we're at now.
That sounds good. And just for people who don't know, you do support both the Symbian and the Windows Mobile platform.
Yes, correct. Yeah.
That sounds good. Can you give us some basic features? Again, obviously the people that we're doing this for know the program well, but I want to hope this gets out over the web and promote the company as well. So can you give us a kind of a short overview as to what you can do with MobileSpeak? I'd appreciate it.
Well, basically, as I always say, MobileSpeak lets you basically have access to whatever the phone actually allows you to do. So this means that we basically, as a screen reader, we read the screen, we provide access to the user interface, and then it really depends on the device what you're allowed to do or not. But generally speaking, nowadays smartphones allow you to do lots of things like internet, browsing, send and receive email, supports MSN Messenger, Skype, you have also the Office applications in Windows Mobile. So almost anything as you can do on a PC.
Now,
yeah, exactly.
Now I've never experienced or used a Symbian phone. Do they have the same level of accessibility?
Well, in terms of features, I would say that you can do the same things.
Okay.
This is just a very of course there are many differences. But generally speaking, on a Symbian phone, you can also navigate through the internet and send and receive email and all that. It's just that Windows Mobile and Symbian are different operating systems, so the user interface is different, and the way the applications behave is very different as well. Yeah.
Understood, but they do have the same level of access in a different way.
That's you can make, absolutely.
Now, I got some questions from people on the, we have a MobileSpeak users list, and I have some questions, and nothing heavy. You're among friends. No attacks here, so.
Okay, good.
No, nothing hard. I think a lot of people want to know, myself included, what is the reason, because a lot of your users are JAWS users. This is going. We're just wondering. What do you think the reason why Eloquence isn't available on MobileSpeak?
Okay. How long is this podcast?
Yeah, I know. Okay, I see you.
Okay, I'm going to make it really short.
Okay.
Basically, from Code Factory's standpoint, I think it's very important that everyone knows that it's our aim to actually provide the users with a choice. Right. This has been our priority from the very start.
Right. Okay.
So this not only means having access to different operating systems like Windows Mobile and Symbian, we're the only company that allows access to both operating systems,
mm-hmm. okay.
but also in terms of voices. So currently, we're actually the company that provides the widest variety of text-to-speech engines. We've got Phonics DeskTalk, we've got Loquendo, Acapella, and lots of other
languages too. I know. Yeah.
Languages, yes, that you've probably never heard of, like tiny TTS vendors that we license the technology from.
Okay.
And it's very. But yes, we don't support Eloquence. The main reason behind this, and I'm always I always tend to be very protective about our relationship with other companies.
Okay.
And especially our partners, but even competitors.
Okay.
So I cannot give, you know, full explanation.
Of course,
but,
of course. Is it licensing? Is that the reason?
Well, the reason is mainly I would say that, as you know, Nuance, which are the owners of Eloquence, they also own Talks,
okay.
which is our main competitor
right.
for Symbian.
Okay.
So, you know, there's a little bit of a collision of interest there, you know.
Okay.
I'm open to it totally. I mean, as I said, we're not, part of our strategy is to never be committed to any company in any way, like
mm-hmm.
Any particular TTS or anything like that. So I'm open to add Eloquence to those 15 plus TTS that we provide. But you know, it's really complicated when you're dealing with
I realize we're still in a niche situation. You got a very niche market, so it makes. I just know we get a lot of new users who get on the list or email me off list and say, or, you know, can I get Eloquence? It's because it's so prevalent, especially among JAWS users. So,
yeah, absolutely. This is the first one of the top 10 questions that we get.
Yeah, I figured you'd get a lot.
we really haven't made any public statement about that, saying
okay.
you know.
Oh, I don't even put you on the spot, but I just know it's a question, and I just want to, you know, at least give you a chance to address it for us. And so it's not you, and the bottom line is it's not you that.
Yeah,
that is,
we would be happy to do that. It's
you
just know. You know that's life, and you know. Not much we can do yet. I mean, I'm totally open to it, and hopefully, you know, we can reach an agreement or something like that.
That's fine. Now, and another thing I want to go over is and this is another big question, is this thing with AT&T. Everybody is absolutely
yeah.
delighted about the $89, I think, discount that you get on mobile speed. I guess
yep.
I had a couple of questions. The first one, because I'm a Blackjack 2 user, so, and you've probably seen on the support
yeah.
list. And by the way, it's my favorite phone of all time.
Yeah,
can you tell
really
us,
good.
Is it or is it not now on their supported list?
Okay, no, it's not on their supported list.
Okay.
And I think that it's good that we go over this
okay.
Because the way dealing with an operator is different from working with a dealer or a distributor of a product. And I'm not specifically talking about AT&T here,
okay.
but in general, because we partner with lots of different operators across Europe. But they go through, you know, these sort of certification processes. There's
okay.
lots of things involved with supporting a phone, let's say.
Right, okay.
So I guess that the bottom line is that they don't really have to support all the phones that we support. I mean, they have all their own rules and, as I said, processes and interests and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Things sometimes may move a little bit slower for one particular phone because of, you know, some reasons.
Right.
So the deal with AT&T was really, I think that it was never really presented as they're carrying mobile speak and we're going to deliver it with any
with
phone.
With every phone, I see. I see. So part of the contract deal then was they can select which phones they think will be the easiest to support or the most convenient to support for them.
I can't really go over the details.
Right. That's okay.
But basically, the deal was presented with, we offer mobile speak for this amount. Mm-hmm. I think that AT&T has made a huge step towards providing accessibility for the blind at a very affordable price.
Agreed. No one's going to argue. That's I agree. Completely agree. Yeah.
Yeah. And the deal, when we did the first press release, it was, okay, we're selling mobile speak with these phones. Mm-hmm. There were a few. There was the N75 for Symbian and a few others for Windows Mobile. And over time, new devices for Windows Mobile have been added. So it's not like the list of supported phones by AT&T is closed and it's going to be obsolete. It's just that there have been some unfortunate circumstances that make the Blackjack not available at this point. Maybe in the future, or maybe in the near future, maybe tomorrow or next week. I don't know.
I understand. That's fine. That's good. I just, because we've seen some things on the list. We had a couple of users saying it now is supported. Some people are saying it's not. I've been given.
No, there has been some confusion about it because they support the standard Blackjack with a Windows Mobile 6 upgrade. And I think that this generated some confusion.
I know that from the
past experiences with users with some other deals that AT&T had, they had some problems that the list of supported devices was becoming obsolete and things like that. Right. But that's not the case for mobile speak because the list is actually growing over time and it will grow.
That's very good. Now, obviously, in the U.S. we have other vendors. I am an AT&T customer, so I'm a happy man. Do you think you might ever get into a similar contract or understanding with Verizon or Sprint or T-Mobile?
There's no communication with them at any level at this point.
Okay, good. Well, it's good to know. At least, because I know people are just kind of waiting with bated breath. But it's really progressive of AT&T.
The AT&T is way ahead in terms of understanding the needs of the blind and providing solutions for them. I know that for a fact.
Obviously, yeah, they're
and we're extremely pleased that they're carrying our software.
Our phones, yeah. And like I said, I'll just put it here on the show that the Blackjack 2 is a completely accessible, wonderful phone that works fine with with AT&T network. So just for people to know that. The other thing about one other phone that comes up, of course, is the Q. That seems to be the most popular phone of mobile speak for smartphone users. And my question for that would be, it is clear, and this is true, that you cannot, again, we get a lot of I get a lot of emails on this, that you cannot hear mobile speak while on a call.
And this is
because of the hardware, not because of mobile speak. Is that correct?
Absolutely, absolutely. And of course, one of the biggest problems that we have here is that sometimes limitations of the hardware or limitations that are just from the phone, mm-hmm. they are immediately assumed to be limitations of mobile speak.
Agreed. Yes, that's right. That's absolutely right.
and that, you know, that's because of the nature of our application, because it works so tight with the device that, you know, anything is assumed to be mobile speak fault. That's not the case at all. There is a hardware limitation with a Q that doesn't allow audio to be played while on a call. I don't know if it's for security reasons or simply a hardware limitation or something. But that's the way it is right now.
And to date, that's for all. I mean, it seems like there's all these different incarnations of the Q, the global, the C, but they are all consistent in this limitation at this point, right?
Yes, okay. Which makes me think that it's really a hardware design.
Now, again, I don't have much experience on the Symbians. Is there anything you would like to note about limitations on the hardware of any Symbian phones?
Okay, the first thing I would say to any newcomer with Symbian is that they go for a Symbian 9 phone,
okay,
which is the new version of the operating system,
okay.
Because that's a huge step towards a better user interface and better accessibility. Usually, Symbian phones, if they find a big bug, I haven't really seen any firmware that has a huge bug that just the showstopper for the phone.
Exactly. Okay.
But,
so, okay.
But if they find something that's, you know, becoming critical or something, they usually update the firmwares quite regularly for the Symbian phones.
That's correct.
Which it also happens on Windows Mobile. I'm not saying that Symbian's better at that point.
No, I understand.
We have lots of Windows Mobile firmwares as well. Although we get, especially on Windows Mobile, we get lots of users buying phones that are not on our supported list, and then they call us and say, not supported. And sometimes it becomes quite of a nightmare because you have this user who has spent money on a phone, and the phone is not supported, and, you know, you feel really bad for the user, and then, you know, you try to squeeze support for this phone into the roadmap. But I would strongly recommend to any person that's listening to this podcast and wants to buy a phone that they just go and check our supported phones list.
I agree. Why? This is going to sound funny. One of the things I think people do when they first get into mobile speak is that they look for a user's guide, and all we seem to see in English is a quick start guide, and so people keep thinking that this is like an abbreviated version of a much deeper or larger manual. Can you set the record straight? Is a quick start guide, in effect, the entire user guide for the product?
For some products there is, for some products it isn't. And I agree with you that we should clarify that on the webpage. Documentation is a huge task for us. For example, when we are near a release of a minor update of a product, we decide to publish the quick start guide and leave the full manual for later, you know.
No, I understand.
Is
it that I can't recall ever seeing a manual in English. Now, if you look at the site, it does, I think in Spanish there's one that says user's guide, but in English it just says quick start guide. And I think even I was wondering.
Yeah, we should certainly clarify that.
Yeah, rename it or something. I don't know, but just. I think we always feel like we're being left out. Like there's something, some deep dark code that we or.
However, we make sure that of course documentation is critical. We make sure that the information provided in the quick start guide is well enough to.
Oh, I know. I understand that, and certainly all the questions
also,
that I've.
And also it's very important to note that of course you always have the dealers. For support,
great,
providing support and information and assistance to the user. And this is actually one of the things that I'm most proud of Code Factory, that we've partnered with a great number of companies who actually care about the user, and this is really important.
I agree. I think the thing is, it's not so much that the information I'm seeking isn't there. It's just that I think. For a lot of people, there's something about having an item labeled user's guide versus quick start guide. Intrinsically, you think, okay, this is going to give me the most basic thing to get started, but there's so much more. And I think, honestly, the quick start guide is very comprehensive.
No. In the previous version, I think it's Mobile Speak Pocket, I believe, we had a full user manual, and then we had a quick start guide.
Right.
And at some point, we decided to kind of merge them because it was quite a bit of a confusion for users. So, and we're in the process of that, and I totally agree with you. We should clarify that, and we're working very hard on providing new ways of getting support. For example, we're setting up a knowledge base which. All the user queries that we get hundreds of user queries.
Oh, I can imagine.
Per week.
I can
so
imagine.
So we're putting all of them into this knowledge base, which has a search engine and everything's categorized and everything. So we're working really hard on support because we're becoming a mainstream product. I mean, we've got hundreds of new users.
Every week, yeah, you're
week.
Big time. That's why I was so nervous to conduct it. Like, I was telling my wife, I said, I'm a little nervous about this, and she goes, why? I said, because. This is big time. It's a world product. It's not like it's just in one little, part of a country or even a continent.
Exactly. And as you say, I mean, also you need to take into account that the documentation process is really complicated because we currently cover 53 different countries.
It's not only
the priority, of course, of having good documentation in English, like Quick Start Guide, Braille Manual, audio presentations in English, but also you need to work and assign resources towards providing good documentation for some other 20 languages. So,
agreed.
I mean, all the documentation is a very heavy process, but although I think that we're doing very good at that. I mean, we have good documentation, we have good support.
It's all there.
We're improving documentation, and we're putting, you know, new means of getting support. So, I mean, highest priority for us.
Right. No, certainly the information that anybody needs is there. I just, you know, if you just renamed it to user guide, I think a lot of people would think, okay, this is it. At least I know I got what I need. But when they see the word quick in front of it in English,
yes.
It just means, okay, you know, a curtailed list, you know, short, abbreviated. Now, let me ask you this. I think the most exciting thing for me was when I discovered about the user-centered licensing. I think that's what's going to turn the tide for a lot of people. Obviously, you know, money's a factor. And now that we can have the software follow us as opposed to being attached to the actual phone.
Yep.
And there's always this question. This gave me a problem, but I was able to deal with HandyTech. What happens, and if you could just, what will happen if a person doesn't, let me just say this. I know it's the best solution, the best scenario is for a person to go online with their phone, deactivate the phone from the Code Factory server.
But you don't need to go online. I mean, you can do this over SMS.
Oh, okay. Forgive me. That's just what I've done.
It's not like you need a computer or it's a complicated process.
So you deactivate the phone, and then you can free to install that on another device. What happens if the phone crashes or is stolen? And no, I've never had a stolen phone personally, but I've seen people lose phones. My wife has lost a phone or two. So, what's the process to get the license free?
Okay, the first thing that we should note here is that, I mean, why are we? You know, you need to understand that mobile speak smartphone, for example. It licenses technology from other companies, like, for example, the TTS and some other pieces of technology.
Okay.
So there's other companies to which we buy technology from in order to bundle it into our product.
Understood.
So these companies basically trust our company in the sense that, you know, we're going to be
to safeguard their copyrights and such.
Yeah, there's lots of copyrights and IPs, things like that. So we need to be very careful with having a streamlined process when things like that happen.
Okay.
Because we actually report, the amount of licenses that we've sold for this particular voice and this particular product and so on. So there needs to be standard process.
Okay.
So, as you say, what happens if I lose my phone or what happens if my device is just dead?
Right.
Well, and this is something that, as I said, it's a very straightforward process. We deal with it dozens of times a month.
Okay.
I mean, it's nothing new or something strange or anything like that.
Okay.
So what happens? I mean, you simply, if you get your phone stolen, the best thing you should do is go to the police report it and get a report from the police saying my phone has been stolen. Then you just submit this report to us.
Okay.
And we'll provide you with a free license. Now, if your phone gets broken or is sent to operator's technical department, and they say, "Oh, we're going to replace this phone because it's just totally broken, and we'll send you a new one,"
okay.
Then just have them send a receipt of that or a paper saying, you know, this old phone is broken and we're replacing it. And then you just send it to us and we'll give you a license for free. And, you know, this is a pretty
it's very fair. It's very fair. It's definitely
I think it's totally fair. Of course, there's sometimes users who come to you and say, okay, my carrier, they took the phone and they didn't give me a receipt. what do I do?
That doesn't happen, does it?
Yeah, I mean, we need a way to actually
verify
the cell phone is, because I mean, honestly, with you, I mean, we get lots of times when some users are just trying to
scan
to
the system.
Just as any other software company.
That's absolutely correct. Yeah. Yeah,
there needs to be a system and a way to do things that preserves the rights of the users and us as a company that provides, and also the technology providers that trust code factories. And we also, and another thing, I mean, we also expect users to, I mean, when you buy a software, I mean, you're supposed to read the user manual.
Yeah.
You know? I would say over 50% of our support queries,
yeah.
I'm sure our dealers would agree with me, is that are queries related to things that are clear on the user manual.
I know.
I do the same too. When I buy software, I barely read the user manual, but I think we all should do that.
You're absolutely right, and it's, you know, you bring up something funny, because when I was a younger person in my 20s, me and my buddies would never read the manual, even if it took us a month to figure it out. As I've gotten over 40, now I read the manual, but on this, I was so excited about the new phones. I didn't read the manual. I didn't even look at it. And so again, I fully take responsibility. It just was interesting to note that. But that's great. I mean, I think everybody. It's just the fact that we can take the software with us to any of our new phones. It really makes a difference.
This has been a huge milestone, I think.
Breakthrough for
the accessibility market. I mean, Well, we're seeing that many people just buy one phone, and after 6 months or a year, they just want to change it. And we believe it's fair for those users to be able to just transfer the license from one phone to another. I mean, it allows for portability, and it's certainly a really big competitive advantage from our software.
I'll tell you something. I probably would not have purchased a second phone if it hadn't happened, because the phones were expensive. And it opens a whole world up to us, which I think is just fine. Now, moving to the future, because as you know, a lot of new things are coming up, and people want me to ask, and I'm curious myself, what about, and I know you will probably ask this a lot at CSUN, what about the new Daisy Book Reader? Now, where are we on that, well, as far as the
data? That's a project that's currently in the final stages of development for Symbian and Windows Mobile, but we have started with Symbian, so we already have an alpha version of the Daisy application for Symbian.
Okay.
We are very soon going to begin porting it to Windows Mobile.
Okay.
And it's going to be released soon.
I know. They can't give the dates. I got no problem.
Date, but it's certainly one of our priorities. And actually, if you look at Mobile Speak smartphone, you'll see that there's lots of features about book reading and BRF reading, things like that,
right.
And good Braille support and all that. So we're trying to put a high priority on those sorts of features, like especially book reading, being able to use the phone to take notes and things like that.
Right.
So a Daisy player was the perfect step after doing BRF and Braille support.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, the more functionality that you add to the phone or accessibility, I find that the less and less I use my Pocket PC and my notebook. I mean, it's kind of moving things. It's amazing. Life has gotten much better since. I definitely owe you a debt of gratitude. Let me ask you about this now. And this will probably be a quick answer. Any comments or anything about the iPhone? I have to ask. You know, I got to ask this question.
I know. Okay. To me, personally, and this is not like Code Factory's official.
Okay. Off the record. Yeah. Okay.
I think that there's lots of challenges with making the iPhone accessible.
Okay.
Because it's a totally graphical user interface, very, very touchy, and doesn't have a keyboard, which makes life very complicated. But who knows?
Well, I think for me, one of the things I think about when I read about the iPhone or listen to podcasts about it, I guess I get a little nervous as to where technology goes, because it's safe. Sighted people love graphical interfaces, and I just thinking to myself, what happens? Which is going to lead me to my next question. I just have this fear somewhere, like, oh my God, one day we're going to wake up and everybody's going to be touchscreen in their lives, and what we as low vision people or blind people do? And I guess, you know, what I mean.
That's a great point.
Yeah.
I guess that we all must kind of work together mm-hmm. towards making the OEMs and operating system developers realize that there's people that cannot use totally graphical user interfaces. Otherwise, you know, they're just left out.
Out in the cold.
Which
takes me to the next question, which is something I'm really excited about. And I know you.
Let me clarify something.
Okay.
I really, honestly, but I'm just speaking for myself.
Of course.
I don't think that that's going to happen with Windows Mobile and Symbian. The user interface mm-hmm. For Windows, for example, it's been not the same, but it's been
pretty stable.
You know,
lists
and buttons and things like that
since
the 80s. And I really don't see that changing because what happens then with the entire developers community, those, you know, thousands of software that are already running on Windows Mobile. I mean, and also Microsoft, and I know Symbian for a fact, they are also very concerned about backwards compatibility
mm-hmm.
when they release a new version of the software. So I do not see that being too much of a problem with operating systems that have been in the market for a few years already.
Yeah, but they've kind of matured, and so it's not time to panic just yet.
Sorry to interrupt you.
Interrupt. That's okay.
But also, I can only speak for my experience with Microsoft and Symbian, but they're highly committed to accessibility.
Yeah,
I know that.
That's good. Yeah, Microsoft has always taken good care of us, and
absolutely.
Yeah.
We get a great deal of help from them and support. So I would be really surprised if they did something like that.
Okay, now here's the big question. All right, get ready. This is a good one. This comes from Mark Taylor. Me, I haven't got anybody else asking, but I'm curious. I'm going to say two words to you.
Yep.
Google Android. Talk to me. And for those of you who may not know, Android is the open source proposed operating system that Google wants to implement on smartphones, or I say cell phones. And so I just want to know if any ideas. It's open source. We know that. Any thoughts about?
I think that the answer will be who knows.
Okay, fair enough. It's too soon.
I think that we all like the concept that it's open source.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the fact that it's open source doesn't mean that it's a perfect operating system. And I mean not perfect. I mean, okay, so you're developing this screen reader, right?
Yeah.
This operating system. And it's open source and everybody contributes to it and so on. So you make a new build.
Mm-hmm.
How do you install it on all these millions of handsets that are already out there? You know, what happens with the stock of units that a certain operator may have? You know,
mm-hmm.
things like that.
I'm
mostly concerned about deployment rather than having access to the operating system. So there's also many, even if it's an open source operating system, there's also many, many challenges out there.
Wow. I hadn't even thought about what you just said. That deployment.
I'm thinking
about all those distributions of Linux and all the distributions.
Okay, for example, me as a developer of a screen reader,
right.
I make a change to the source code of the operating system to make, I don't know, a button accessible.
Okay.
How long is that going to take until that change is available to the millions of handsets out there?
Yeah. Wow.
You know. You get into a lot of issues there, and you need to be very careful about that.
Well said. Yeah, that's good. I truly hadn't given it that any thought. I just, again, like
yeah,
most, I think open source.
Then you get into all these Linux-like problems.
Yeah,
like,
and big ones,
oh,
big ones, big
this
ones.
This software runs, but only on the under this release, and you need to have this package and this API and whatever. I mean, and really, we're trying to be mainstream here, and we want the user to be able to go to a shop, buy one phone, and install the software.
That's good.
But that doesn't mean that we're not exploring the option. I mean, it's there sitting around Code Factory. I mean, we're exploring the option, and, you know, who knows? Who knows?
I agree. That's a good answer. And like I said, one of the things I didn't realize, and you're right, is when I think about it, even Linux has only just now gotten to the point where you can do a nice GUI interface with a consistent. Before then, it was pretty much for an enthusiast who really were technically savvy, who wanted to get in there and work and get the machine working. So you raise a very good point. But definitely, I think I do believe Google is in the market to stay, especially with this new Spectrum.
Oh yes, oh yeah. Yes.
So
and the operating system is good. I mean, I've tried it. And
oh, you
really
have?
Good.
Okay.
Yeah, I have tried it, and it's good.
Okay, now I'm almost done. I must admit, you've really sticking with me well. This is great. You've gone through all the hard questions. You know, and now, what about GPS? We get again. I know there's Wayfinder for the Symbian phones. Any comments or promises that you'd like to make for the rest of the Windows Mobile people?
Sure. We just announced a partnership with Sendero to release a GPS application for Windows Mobile, and that's under development, quite advanced, and it's going to be available soon as well. So I think it's going to be a great GPS application.
Now, will that be? I have a tracker, a HumanWare tracker, which is a Dell Axiom, and you have to have a separate standalone, you know, GPS receiver.
Okay.
My Blackjack 2, for example, it says it's GPS ready. When a phone says it's GPS ready, does that mean you still need a receiver or you don't? You don't know the answer.
I don't know the answer. I don't know the answer to all the phones.
Right.
But usually, I would say that you don't need an external GPS receiver.
When it says
but
GPS.
That would depend on the phone.
Right. I understand.
Yeah.
You know, as I talk to you, did you used to be a programmer? Are you a programmer?
Yeah, I still am. Yeah, I'm the CEO of the company, but doing some of the development at the company as well, especially on Windows Mobile, but less and less these days.
No, but I can tell there's a certain way a programmer speaks, a certain confidence, a certain, I don't know, authority that is kind of neat. And I heard that, and I was like, oh, he must be a programmer. You certainly.
You've definitely
been in the trenches. You definitely
for many years. But you know, as the company grows, there's lots of other tasks, especially management.
That's right, I understand. You got to get further and further away. And
I'm still I'm still working on right now. As of today, I'm working on MSP 2.0 release, which is hopefully going to happen very soon. And we're fixing bugs here.
That's great. And then I just want to know, and I'm sure people do, about can you tell us a little bit about Code Factory? For example, how many people work there? And I mean, it's you know, again, here in the U.S., you know, if it's not one of the states, we don't feel like we have access to it. So, I mean, sometimes I get a feeling that you have a lot of people working, and you have how does it the hub in Barcelona? How many people work for you?
Okay, we have Code Factory is 15 people right now.
Okay.
Although we have lots of external
Lines to outsource things. I understand.
Well, you know, depending on the project,
right,
things like
right.
that. But Code Factory, the core of the company, is 15 people. The majority of them work in Barcelona, but there's our Windows Mobile product manager, Roselle, who works in the Philippines, and then we have Dinesh, who's a Windows Mobile developer working in India.
Wow, I had no idea.
Yeah.
That's good. That's very good.
And then of course the network of dealers, which I really consider part of the company, and that's one of the keys of success, to have a very strong relationship with your dealers and a lot of trust.
That's very. And how did you come up with the name Code Factory?
Because we make coats.
There it is. Okay, fair enough. Did you ever consider, because I know a lot of people, when I give out your website, you know, just, you know, obviously codefactory.es, because I believe S is the country code or for Spain.
Yeah, Spain, yeah.
Spanish.
Yep.
Did you ever consider codefactory.com? I mean, I'm usually, when even in other countries, people like that .com, .net. I think it was pretty bold of you to go to ES.
Yeah, I'm not opposed to it.
No, I'm not suggesting that you do it. I think it's neat that you didn't. It just seems to me it was a pretty bold step. You know what I mean? I think it's pretty neat.
Yeah,
that you...
it just, okay, Code Factory, you can check on the internet. Codefactory.com was already taken by the time we were basically redesigning all our websites. Mm-hmm. And as you know, we have a brand new website.
Right.
With lots of features, and so that was actually a project inside the company to redesign the website, make all these wizards, device selector wizard, product selector wizard. So by that time, CodeFactory.com was taken, and so we decided to use CodeFactory.es. I mean,
I love it. I think it's great.
Company. We also have. CodeFactory.cat, which stands for Catalunya, which is the region of Spain where we're at. So.
Oh, okay, and they'll both take you to the same place?
No, CodeFactory.cat is the server for our knowledge.
Okay, understood. No, I love it, and it's a neat thing when I give out your address. It's like CodeFactory, okay, I know, CodeFactory.com. No.
Yeah.
But it does stress that, you know, it points out that there's a whole world out there. Not everything is going to be a .com and a .net. There seems to be this.
So it's just that the .com is getting very crowded. I mean, it's getting hard to actually get a .com thing, you know.
You're
so I mean,
right.
why not .es? I mean,
I love it. It's again, it.
Oh, but by the way, it's hosted in the United States.
Oh, is it?
I have to say that.
Okay, that's all. No, I think to me is the one thing about Code Factory, and I think you might agree with me on this, that there seems to be a certain legitimacy to .net and especially .com, and it's nice to have a full-featured company that's making a change in the world that is not a .com, which I think is great.
I, to be honest with you, I've never really considered having a .com or a .es very important. I mean, we have mobilespeak.com,
right,
which will redirect you to the main website.
Okay,
and
right.
And mobileaccessibility.com and mobilemagnifier.com.
Yeah.
So we have lots of .coms. We have like 100 different
domains.
It's just that, you know, we tried CodeFactory.com. Okay, it didn't work. So let's go for ES. I mean, I don't think it's really that important.
Significant, yeah. But to me, I like the impression that, you know, not everything has to be a .com to be... To be legitimate, to be on the top
absolutely,
side of things,
absolutely.
And I think that's great. Well, I have certainly enjoyed our time, and you know what, you've answered all the hard questions, and one of the reasons I wanted to have you on here is because I've seen some other interviews, and no one seems to want to even take on the questions, even if you can't give us a definitive answer. At least, you know, we know that you're aware of it. You know what I'm saying, and that you're,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's
no, I have no problem answering questions. I mean, you know, transparency has always. You know, I mean, no problem with that.
And for can you give us just the contact information and also the best place to send technical questions, like on the email? I'd appreciate that.
Sure. I would recommend people go to codefactory.es, and then we have lots of resources like a support page and wizards to select applications and so on. So, but if they want, they can also send an email to info@codefactory.es. But I certainly believe that going to the web page and using the mechanisms that we have there, it's the best option.
Okay, that's okay. And is there also an email like support at CodeFactory?
Yes, support@codefactory.es. However, we strongly recommend people to use the support form that's on our webpage,
okay,
because it has lots of fields for entering information that's going to make everything faster.
The troubleshooting faster.
Yes, absolutely.
It's been a privilege. It really, I mean, I'm excited. You know what? I used to be a programmer, and I've lost that sense of authority and certainty that you have. But when I listen to you talk, there's a part of me that goes, maybe I want to get back into programming. Maybe it sounds kind of, you know, because
you're cutting edge.
One more thing before we go, and I've almost forgot. Can you tell me about a little bit about the scripting? Because I know that you guys have a scripting language. How do we get access to that, or what is it really? Is it beta? Where are we on that?
I would say we haven't made any public statement about that. I would say it's in beta.
Okay.
Because but there's a manual for scripting that we can send anyone who requests it. It's just that it's not finished, so we haven't made it publicly available. But yeah, I mean, scripting is can be done for Windows Mobile using a scripting language called Lua, which is it's not of our own development. It's a standard scripting language. And it interfaces with mobile speak at a very low level, so it allows you to do lots of things. We're trying to, in the next release, make it a little bit simpler, because right now it requires lots of skills and development knowledge of the Windows API and so on. And so we're trying to work on making it easier. But anyone who wants to write scripts can do it. The other day, someone told me that he did a script for a book reading application. So, and it's going to be available soon. So, I mean, people are actually writing scripts.
And who would they?
So, I encourage everyone to contact me and request a manual. I'll be happy to assist as well.
So, can they send an email to info or support? Which one? Which email address or which?
Probably info@codefactory.es because it's not strictly a support thing.
Understood.
Yeah.
It has been a privilege, and again, you've re-energized me. I may actually start doing a little scripting myself. You know what I mean?
Excellent. That's great.
I hope I have the good fortune to talk to you again soon. Listen, you have definitely changed the company. I want you to know this, that you have definitely revolutionized my entire day-to-day experience, and for that, I owe you a great deal. So thank
really
you.
Happy to hear that.
So thank you very much, and hopefully I'll get to talk to you again soon.
Okay. A pleasure. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, that's all for this episode of the Candle Shore Podcast. A very special thanks to Mr. Sanchez for being on the show and also for creating groundbreaking technology that so many of us use to connect to the world in which we live. For all things Candle Shore, you may go to www.candleshore.com. If you'd like to subscribe to this podcast, you may do so at feeds.feedburner.com/Candle Shore. And if you'd like to send me an email, I'd love to hear from you. You may do so at musicman@candleshore.com. Remember to make a joyful noise this week, and I'll see you back here soon. Take care. Bye-bye.